Today is Thursday. It's May 18th, 2017. It's 11:11 in the morning. This is John Williams, and you are listening to The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record here at WGN Radio. Portions of this can be heard on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 a.m. on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
Here's where Eric Zorn normally introduces himself with some sort of fun adjective. We don't have that luxury today. Eric cannot join us. We could do it for him.
I am Eric Zorn, the missing, vanished, kidnapped. No, I think he's on vacation. Is he on vacation?
I think he's doing a college retrieval.
Oh, no kidding. Nice.
Nice.
Before we get rolling, we do have a sponsor for the Mincing Rascals podcast. Allow me 60 seconds to tell you that you can sail with Brenda and I aboard the most luxurious ship ever built. This is the sole commercial for the Mincing Rascals. We would love it if you joined us on this journey. It's on the brand new Regent Seven Seas Explorer. It's got really large rooms, and it's got the largest suite balconies at sea, which is what you want. You open up your door, and there's more room than a Chicago condo has. I know, because I'm also buying a Chicago condo. The Explorer is large enough to offer 9 different ways to dine, but it's only got 750 passengers, so it's a cozy, intimate ship. April 23rd next year, we're going to sail for 8 glorious nights from Barcelona to Rome. We'll explore ports in Spain, France, and Italy. It's all-inclusive, too. I love that about these cruises. You do not pay for the shore excursions once you're on board, wine or spirits or soda or extra sandwiches. You don't even tip. You don't need a nickel when you get on this ship. It's our 10th trip with Kelly Cruises and Tours. They know how to make lasting memories, and many of our fellow cruisers are proof of that. They're now friends, and they come time and again, and I want that to include you. The spectacular Regent Seven Seas Explorer will fill quickly. Enjoy special savings if you book by June 30th, including a $500 per suite shipboard credit. Call 630-990-1111, 630-990-1111. Former FBI Director Robert Mueller has been tabbed to head a special investigation into the Russian hack of the 2016 election. President Trump calls it the greatest witch hunt ever. Not since Princess Elsa saying, "Let it go," have the words "let it go" carried more weight. We'll also, by the way, in this podcast, talk about Roger Ailes' passing and what happens when billionaires give other billionaires millions of dollars to run for governor. Kristen, do you think this is the good choice, Robert Mueller, for a special investigation? And should we, in fact, have one?
Yes and yes. It's gotten to a point where initially I didn't want to see a special prosecutor because you have various committees in the House and Senate taking this up. And I think they have tended to be pretty bipartisan. And, you know, if you look at the Benghazi hearings, I mean, it was hours and hours. You do get your questions answered. You do see some transparency. I do have some faith in the House and Senate carrying out these duties. But when we're getting to this point where you have a president putting pressure to drop a federal investigation, there's no other choice. I mean, you saw even Republicans coming out and switching gears and saying, yes, we need to have this. And his record is pretty impeccable. He doesn't even do press conferences.
You're talking about Mueller?
Yes, Mueller. Yeah. Mueller. Yeah. That he's a straight arrow. And so now we see where this goes.
You think, Steve, it's going to come down to he said, Mueller's going to say, pardon me,
Comey.
Comey's going to say, I have these notes that say you said that. The president's going to deny it. So it's who do you believe?
Well, and here we are on May 18th, 2017. If it's a he said, which one do you choose?
Well, right? I mean, answer to that.
Right. I mean, I don't think it will. I think there'll be more than that. And I don't think it's going to come. I don't know if that will even become part of a criminal investigation. It might, you know, come up far short of that. But I think, you know, most people are celebrating Mueller. He did it again. You know, the White House issued a statement last night, which was sort of a boilerplate. We look forward to the truth coming out, to this being resolved quickly. You know, so it looked like they were going to play by the rules. And then this morning he tweeted out that quote you had about the witch hunt. And then also today, Michael Flynn's lawyers told the Senate Intelligence Committee they will not comply with the subpoena for the records there. So I think there might be a little more teeth in a more criminal investigation where some of these guys can sort of thumb their noses at the congressional committees. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to at Mueller. And the members of Congress who are now trying to protect their own investigations are saying, hey, we're about more than crimes here. We're about the Russian influence and how we can stop that in the future.
Mm-hmm. This is four investigations now. This would be four then, right? The FBI, the House, the Senate, and then the special investigation?
Well, I think the special would be part of the FBI, right? That would all be put in together.
Right, and self-inflicted. I mean, Trump keeps bringing this on himself. So it's how can you avoid that?
Well, I mean, I think everyone who graduated from the Coast Guard Academy agrees that he has been treated so unfairly by
the media. He got a round of applause when he said that. I'm not exactly sure by whom, and maybe that was the appropriate thing to do is applaud the president. But do you think that he has been treated unfairly and as badly as any president ever?
I think he has faced much, much more scrutiny. And this is just, I had to give a speech about this at the City Club, so I have the statistic in my head. If you go back and look at the first 100 days of Barack Obama in his first term, there were maybe, and this is just like a random Google search, but using the same time frame and the same phrases, there were 22,000 stories, news stories written about that included Obama and 120 and his first 100 days, 22,000. There were 868,000 same search under Donald Trump. There's no question from his cabinet picks to his tweets to the treatment of his spokespeople that he is getting much more scrutiny than previous presidents. And so scrutiny, yes, unfairly, I'm not so sure about that because, again, I think he brings a lot of this on himself.
Right. And so I would question your use of that statistic a little bit because it's hard to judge. You know, the Obama administration day one didn't come out and say my crowd size was bigger. You know, so a lot of the scrutiny, a lot of the extra stories have been sort of self-created by the things
that
they've done
that Obama
as well.
Never created.
Right. You know, attention that Obama never created or Bush never created or, you know, things like that.
But there were things that Obama did in his first 100 days. He also introduced a tax plan that was going to be heavier on high income earners that would have affected, you know, different people where, like, even his tax plan didn't get that much scrutiny. We passed the huge $800 billion stimulus package in the first 100 days of Obama's administration. Even that, had that been Trump, every single line item of that would have been scrutinized to death. And so I do think there's been a heavier, there has been a piling on effect with Donald Trump. But again, a lot of it he brings on himself.
I don't want to fight an old fight, but there was a lot of scrutiny on that and a lot of criticism for the president about the TARP funding and all of that stuff. I mean, he took his lumps there too. We are in a hyper era. I'll grant you that. But I think, and we've talked about this on your show, John, this has never happened before. I mean, there's never been a holder of the presidency who behaves the way he does, Republican or Democrat. And so judging against the past, it's hard to imagine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's never, this has never happened. You've never had some guy tweeting,
right,
you know, the way he's tweeted or...
You thought a black president was an outlier. Donald Trump is an outlier of outliers. He's bizarre at times right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the instances now, and there's so many I can't single any out.
Well, I just think when you look at even his advisors, like Kellyanne Conway, again, I mean, she has been dragged through the ringer.
But she clearly lies.
Well, they all lie, Steve.
They do.
I mean,
but she clearly lies.
Well, but to my point is, like, if you go back, you know, David Axelrod is considered, you know, he's considered really credible, and for many reasons. He is, but he was in the same role. He's an advisor to the president. His job is to spin. He is a spin meister. That's what he's made his fortune on. He and other people around Obama, the Valerie Jarretts, et cetera, they never got the sort of scrutiny that she does. That is, you know, the way she's sitting on a couch or what she's wearing or how she looks. There is a very sexist, aggressive posture toward some of his advisors that I don't think you saw with Obama.
I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean,
I do not.
If you're going to talk about the way she sat on the sofa, which was ridiculous.
When did that happen?
She was taking the picture of the president with a bunch of people behind his desk there, and she was on the sofa with her smartphone taking
a
picture.
She wasn't on a sofa. She was barefoot kneeling on it in a very unusual way. I mean, it wasn't just her sitting on a sofa.
That's not sexist aggressive, Steve?
I don't know if...
Valerie Jarrett had been doing that, wouldn't we say, oh, it's cute. Look, they're all just hanging in the White House, taking pictures with Obama. They're chilling.
Well, you know what? This is old news, but if Valerie Jarrett had brought to that moment what Kellyanne Conway brought to that moment, probably would have gotten the same thing.
Well, it's not an
isolated
incident.
I don't want to argue alternate facts.
Okay, but there's the problem for Kellyanne Conway. But let's just talk about CNN for a second. Steve and I were talking about this before we walked in here. The president said that his coverage has been unduly unfair and mean. And I think if you look at the way, say, a CNN presents Donald Trump, I think that it looks really hostile to the president. Now, that could be an accurate telling of the stories, and the totality of them are bad for the president because of all of the bad things that he's been doing and his administration has been having. But then if you begin to read CNN, all you're getting is this hostile presentation, and you wonder, gee, that leans left. Isn't that being critical of the president for criticism's sake? Or is that absolutely telling the Spartan truth and too bad for them? And so then you start to question your own judgment, because CNN is bad for President Trump. Now, is CNN being fair about that or not? The president looks at that and says, this is unfair. This is being meaner to me than you've been to anybody ever before.
This goes back, and we talked about this at the time, when Donald Trump, the candidate, gave his birther speech and said he had ended it. Remember, I've now ended it. You should be thankful. And the New York Times and Washington Post both reported the president falsely said. I mean, they accused in their headlines, they said, this guy's not telling the truth. And I think that was the beginning of this feeling of a loosening or increased license for reporters to say, this bull. And so I think you're seeing that exercised everywhere, but probably on CNN too.
They do that a lot in the reporting, don't they? They'll say not just the president said this, they'll say the president falsely said this.
Well, there's just more. I mean, you all know this. It's hard to find straight up news reporting like in the old days where you just presented one side, you presented the other side. You were careful not to insert any of your own opinion. And so people did, you know, I was covering Springfield 20 years ago when Governor Ryan or somebody would say something that you knew wasn't quite true, but he said it. So that was the quote that you put in the paper.
You let his opponent say it wasn't true.
Then you went to the other side. Now you just get constant analysis from reporters. I mean, you watch these shows like Meet the Press elsewhere. To me, I do watch them and I feel like many of the questions are completely loaded. They won't give an administration official a chance to complete a sentence. And this is on both sides. But it's just a loss of what used to be, you know, very careful, objective journalism and a movement toward more analysis.
Which
from
brings
reporters.
Us to Roger Ailes eventually. I mean, I think that's
where I'm going now. So the chairman and chief executive of Fox News has passed away. And I'll read to you from MSN. To Democrats and liberals, he was a manipulator of the news, a puppet master who used his network to turn minor stories into blazing scandals, ostensibly in service of his personal politics. To Republicans and conservatives, he was an essential counterweight, a tough but fair partisan, a middle American from a blue-collar background who gleefully and effectively poked holes in the left-leaning biases of the news media establishment. And one other note, this is from Media Matters, Matt Goetz. He quoted a bunch of people from Fox News. Roger Ailes changed television as we know it, in the words of Brett Baer. He founded one of the most important and successful media outlets in American history, according to Laura Ingram. He dramatically and forever changed the political and media landscape single-handedly for the better, said Sean Hannity. And many people out there would say he saved this country by starting the Fox News Channel, according to Ainsley Earhart on Fox and Friends. He sure did change the media landscape. Did he change it for the better? Are we better for Fox News existing the way it does?
Yes. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get a counter argument from Steve.
Boy, Eric Zorn is pounding on his dashboard somewhere.
I mean, do you guys, first of all, do you ever watch it?
Yeah, I do.
Regularly?
I did this week, and then I had to tune away to find out that there actually was a scandal in the White House, because I wasn't getting that on Sean Hannity's show.
Oh, well, I'm not talking about the shows. I just mean, you know, like Sean Hannity versus Rachel Maddow. But then you have the Rachel Maddows, you have the left side, you know, also. I mean, I watch the MSNBCs and the coverage of different candidates and different issues. And I do find that it's very one-sided. And there was a need for a Fox News, just like you have the Washington Times and the Washington Post, and you have National Review Online, and you have the New York Times. The more speech and coverage you have, the better. And you can't tell me that some of these left-leaning outlets are not tilting their news coverage. Of course they are.
Which ones?
I would say, in general, MSNBC, right. most of their programming.
I would, too. And that's exactly my point.
I would MSNBC, say most of their commentary.
Absolutely, overwhelmingly so. But it didn't exist until Roger Ailes and Fox News. And so that's why I might argue that we're not better off for it. He was a genius, and he Fox News has done remarkably well, a great product.
More people watch Fox News than watch CNN and MSNBC combined.
Until
this week.
But I don't know if big picture there was a service, because you might argue that ABC or NBC tended to tilt left. I don't know. But I think there was a great duty to try to be as fair as you could. With Fox, because they did so well and they didn't try so hard to be as fair as they could. They just didn't. They were expressing a point of view, which was their right. They did so well that I think that allowed for others to try it too. And I think that's what brought us MSNBC. So if we didn't have Fox News, we might be a little more boring when it comes to, we might be limited to Crossfire on CNN.
There wouldn't be an MSNBC. Rachel Maddow wouldn't be.
She wouldn't be on TV. I think we'd be a little more centered in all of our coverage. And I think we'd all be better off if we were a little more centered in what we're hearing.
Do you agree with that?
I would if you're coming from a place that pre-MSNBC and pre-Fox News, we were centered. But I think that was the rise of Fox News, was that they weren't.
Well, we were a little more centered, though. We were more centered than we are now.
Why do you think, though, it grew so fast, Steve?
Evidently, it fed a huge group of people who thought that they were being written off. And
you're
being
here to tell them
to.
That they're wrong?
No, I'm not saying it shouldn't have come up. It was a brilliant move. It was a great move in television. I'm not saying that. I'm saying what it did then was spawn this advocacy news programming on either side. And
okay, but then isn't the first step the left-leaning of CBS, NBC, ABC? Otherwise, Fox News wouldn't have had a void to fill, right?
Maybe, but
there's
maybe
an audience that felt alienated.
Okay. There was definitely an audience that felt alienated. That's not exactly the same as saying that the networks were
wrong.
Leftist. I mean, you can feel wronged and not have been wronged.
Well, everybody in the media is leftist.
Okay.
Not Eric.
I think
who are we kidding here? I'm going to guess 80% of people who work in broadcast media outside of the Sean Hannity show, the Rush Limbaugh show, and Fox News are left leaning. Vote Democrat.
I don't. Okay.
You don't think that? That's a guess.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you look at the money in media. You look at Sinclair Media, which is just bought Tribune Media.
No, there's actually data to back that up.
I'm not interested in that.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
I mean,
no,
you look at Rush Limbaugh, you look at a lot of the big money.
I'm not saying they don't
have
a voice. Think about it. Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, these are the giants of talk and news in America today, and they're all very right-leaning. So it's not like they don't have a voice.
No, but rank-and-file reporters think that they're all crackpots.
I think that's because they are.
I don't think you can throw them all together. I mean, someone like a Megyn Kelly, who was on Fox for many years, I think was very fair. She grilled the right.
Right.
She grilled the left.
She was.
So
she was being groped by backstage.
Well, that's why she left. I mean, and now she has a new home.
You were going to say something about the facts bear that out.
So
there
have been some polls that have just polled journalists on who they voted for. And there have been some right-leaning publications here in Illinois that actually went and pulled primary voting records of most of the political reporters in this city.
You can look that up.
Yeah. Your primary, when you pull a primary ballot, you're either pulling a Republican or a Democratic ballot.
Okay.
They're pulling Democratic ballots in most cases. Now, the question is whether or not that influences their coverage. And I think Steve would probably argue, and I would in some cases too, that they still are, just because you pull a Democratic ballot, that doesn't mean that everything you say and write is going to be, left-leaning.
Well, hopefully the same is true for Republican reporters as well.
There aren't many.
I used to always pull a Democratic ballot in Chicago because I wanted to vote in the contests, right?
Right.
And the contests were only among Democrats. Now, that's not quite as true anymore, right, with the nonpartisan elections and things like that. They're, I mean,
well, why do you guys think that Democrats, reporters, pull a Democratic ballot? I mean, what is should we, rather than dismiss that as unduly partisan, should we think about, I wonder why that is?
I think reporters get into the field because they want to fight for the little guy. I mean, that's generally what journalists do. They are a voice for the little guy.
They want to affect change.
And they want to affect change, and they want to hold public officials accountable. And the Democratic Party has done a better job on messaging that we're the party of the little guy. We're the party of the middle class. Journalists don't make a lot of money. They don't. They are the middle class. They do struggle with their bills and making their mortgage payments and such. So that's why. I mean, if you even look at just the commentary in the two newspapers in this town, aside from John Cass and occasionally when I write a column, I can you point to one other a right-leaning local columnist?
Stephen Chapman? Where would you put Chapman?
Chapman is—he's more libertarian, and he's been—he's probably more left-leaning since this administration has been
But your
elected.
Point is well taken. I mean, if you do think about who are the most famous commentators, who are the page two, page three commentators in this city, it's Mary Mitchell, or it's an Eric Zorn, or it's was Roper for a while. It's Zorn. Mary Schmeek, I would guess, leans left, but she doesn't write about politics.
If you have to guess, then that's not, we're not talking about her.
I'll bet I'm right.
No, well, and I'm thinking more of the people who are very out there, the Mark Browns, the Eric Zorns. I mean, it's no secret.
Right.
We don't have to guess where they're from. That Jesse Jackson has a column, the Mary Mitchells.
The column that I showed you today from
Rex Hupke?
Rex Hupke, he's been writing almost exclusively anti-Trump articles since the,
that goes back. I don't know Rex's politics.
What do you mean you don't know Rex's politics?
Well, this is where you started by saying, can you be anti-Trump and not be partisan?
Yeah. Well, he's...
He's a humorist, too. I mean, his columns are hilarious.
They are. They are just funny.
You know, they're very
but
funny.
But Republicans are not laughing at them. Let's talk about Bruce Rauner. So Ken Griffin gives Bruce Rauner, because he doesn't have enough money in his campaign war chest, $20 million. Rauner now has over $70 million in his campaign war chest to run for Illinois governor. I'm amazed that anybody even wants the job. I'm offended by that number. That's too much money. It's ridiculous. I don't know what campaign finance reform even means, but somehow that should not be able to happen. I think $70 million is insulting.
It's obscene. It is obscene to think of all of how many organizations in Illinois are craving for scraps from government, from taxpayers, and how broke we are, and that all of this money gets dumped into campaigns. I would merely point out that while this is an obscene amount of money, over the past 3 or 4 years, Republicans, because of financiers like Rauner and others on his side, have been able to keep pace with what the Democrats have been raising in this state for centuries. I mean, everybody talks about the Republican Party being Rauner funded, and it largely is. But nobody ever points out that Mike Madigan, who's the head of the Democratic Party, is largely funded by a few groups too.
Are the contributions that big?
They're not. They are not. They used, but for years,
they're big enough.
They were, when you count in organized labor, SEIU, trial lawyers, all of these different groups that routinely invest in Democratic races. The numbers were, I mean, the Republicans were squashed for years because they didn't want
right.
any power.
So my question would be, were they squashed by several people giving less money rather than a few people giving a lot of money? But I mean, if it's SEIU, and I mean, obviously they're giving big checks too, but they're
not
giving $20 million checks.
They are not.
Are there any
exactly.
limits? Is there no limit to what you can give?
There are limits until the caps get blown off. Like you are limited by a certain number, and then if your opponent writes a big check, then the caps get blown off, and then there's no limits. There's just disclosure.
So who blows off the limit in this case? Because there's not a
Republican has given that much to any other of the candidates, yeah. right?
So maybe he did. Maybe he did initially.
He blew out his own limit, right.
Right. I think Chris Kennedy was the first, though. I think
okay,
somebody dumped
asking.
Like $250,000 first into their race, and so that blew the cap on that
okay.
side.
Okay.
And Kennedy's got about $1 million in his campaign war chest right now of his own money. And Pritzker's going to have all the money he needs.
Well, $250,000 from Kennedy, that's almost what Pritzker saves on property taxes.
It actually is about the same number. But at the end of an article in the Sun-Times today, it says, Rauner says that those ads, which these dollars are funding right now, have nothing to do with his hopes of being reelected. Instead, they're focused on getting a state budget deal passed. And that's kind of insulting, too. Who are we kidding here? Mm-hmm. Those are campaign ads. I don't know what $70 million, I guess we're going to see hundreds of millions of dollars spent in television ads between now and the election. I can wait.
More on TV ads than actually paying the bills.
I know if they just took that money and put it towards the state's debt, we would be
better off. So what's going on there now? So the Senate, the Democrats passed a couple of bills yesterday. They say they're going to vote some more this week. The Republicans were part of this grand bargain, but then they said they weren't prepared to vote. What's all that about?
They were close to a bipartisan agreement on a number. There's like six or seven bills they passed yesterday, and there's more to come. But that there were just like, you know, T's that needed to be crossed and I's that needed to be dotted. And then you would have had bipartisan support. So they feel like the trigger got pulled just a couple days too soon. Then you have Senate President John Cullerton looking at his watch like, guys, May 31st, let's go. We've been talking about this since January. So I'm a proponent of like, put it on the board, make these people vote. People will try to squirm out of having to vote on this all day long. So he pulled the trigger. Some bills passed, some didn't. And Republicans were, you know, standing up and kind of complaining about the, you know, that they didn't finish to completion progress that they had made.
Hmm. One last question for you guys before we go to our recommendations. There's a guy who does mosaic art in the city to fill potholes. Sometimes they're bags of Cheetos, flowers. They're fun little things. You go, oh, look at that. Oh, it's a mosaic. It's filled a pothole. It's a service. It's art. He's now got an anti-Trump mosaic in a pothole near Trump Tower. And evidently the city allows it. In fact, the city has not said no to the guy who wants to float a bunch of pigs as balloons in front of the letters T-R-U-M-P on his tower for a day. Should the city embrace that or allow that kind of art, or should the city try and squash that?
Are the pigs being flown in the name of art or in political protest?
I mean, you tell me.
Well, I don't know. If he's applying for a permit to protest for a political protest, then I think you allow that. That's free speech. You allow that to happen.
It's got to be both. I mean, he's saying it's art, but clearly it's an anti-Trump message.
Wouldn't that be a free speech issue if it's not, if you ask for a permit? If you wanted to get a permit to march somewhere, you could do that.
Would you say this? I guess so, but I think this is an extraordinary thing. Float giant balloons in front of Trump Tower. What if somebody asked for some extraordinary thing like that over the new Obama library? Would we just sit there and say, well, that's art, and these people don't like the president, but they have the right to do it, and the city is going to allow that?
We'll see. I don't know.
Special permits.
I think if it's something like you're saying, yeah, they have to. I mean, you can't. But a mosaic in a pothole that's on the public way,
on
city property, that seems, I mean, so then I can just take a patch of sidewalk in front of Tribune Tower and say something anti-Rahm Emanuel. You think the city council would sign off on that?
I don't think they would.
That's where you can't take public property, but the pigs, I think, are fair game.
Fair game, really. Okay, here's our recommendations of the week, something that we are watching, reading, listening to, or consuming. I'll go first this time. Mine is to take advantage of the Chicago River Walk. You know, I'm living downtown for a few months right now. I'm getting more exposure to what the downtown has to offer. I'm new to what they've done with this. I used to watch them putting
it
up.
Yeah.
And it's functional. It works. I mean, people do use it the way they intended. I had a beverage there the other night, watched the city, looked up at Trump Tower and thought, this is just a glorious use of this space.
Oh, for four pigs.
I did not say that.
Five pigs.
So my recommendation is as you listen to this, if you have not been downtown, one of these warm days coming forward here, you should definitely find a way to avail yourself of the Riverwalk between, well, I'd say Tribune Tower and the bend in the river. That's kind of where it goes right now.
Okay, I'm going to cheat a little bit and bring up one more issue in my recommendation. Mm-hmm. I suggest you go to YouTube or any news site and look at the video of the security guards for President Erdogan of Turkey kicking protesters in the head on the Tony streets of Washington, D.C., kicking them in the head. And so far, the State Department has expressed its disapproval, nothing else. I mean, these thugs working for another president went up to people exercising their right to protest in this country, and they assaulted them. John McCain says that the ambassador to Turkey should be expelled from the country over it. All I want you guys to do is look at the video and you tell me.
Yeah, nobody's pressing charges. I don't know if diplomatic
community.
They're gone now, so we can't do anything about it.
The black suits, they left with the president.
Yeah.
I have not seen that.
Oh, yeah,
I will look it up.
Because there's so much going on. I understand why no one has, because of all the Trump stuff. But they kick him in the head, more than one person.
Steve,
have I said that?
You've been walking up and down the halls of this station saying that all week.
Right.
Kicking in the These are Americans? Who
I don't
are
know
there
if they're, I think they're, they were Kurds. I think they were protesting on behalf of Kurds.
They live in the United States and were there protesting his arrival.
Washington police were there trying to keep control of it. It got a little crazy. And then while this one guy's lying on, I'm going to say it again, but this one guy's lying on the ground.
What happened, Steve?
A security guard comes up and he, with me now, kicks
him
in
the
head.
It's
and then
outrageous.
Walks away. I mean, it was as outrageous as the security guard getting punched here in River North.
What a fun recommendation. Thank you, Steve.
You betcha.
Kristen, what's your recommendation this week?
It's so bad. Big Little Lies. It's a total candy book that I'm reading. I asked someone for a recommendation for a summer read, and that's what it is. There's like an HBO series now out about it. You're familiar. So I'm reading that book. It's almost hard to digest because it's so, I don't know.
What is it about?
It's about these very highfalutin women and stay-at-home moms and how they fight with each other and catfight. And at some point, there's an actual murder. And then it becomes this, it's kind of a backwards telling story about what led up to that moment.
Sounds like Desperate Housewives meets Housewives of Atlanta.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is.
What fun.
I know, but I don't think it's helping my IQ much.
It doesn't have to. I think your IQ is safe. And that's Kristen McQuarrie. Steve Bertrand just left the room. It may be something we
stormed
said.
Stormed out of here.
Maybe he's actually talking to a staffer saying they kicked him in the head. And Eric Zorn should be able to join us next week. Ben Cortez is the engineer of Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Ben. It's produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We will drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.